Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The brightest of bargains await in the unmissable Black Friday event, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Let's go straight back to Patricia Keane. Patricia was on the programme yesterday. She contacted us. She was born with cerebral palsy, is also quadriplegic. She was in her bed, has been confined to bed since last Wednesday, 24/7, because the hoist, the medical gantry, people would be familiar with them in hospitals to help you lift and be lifted. A bar, a crossbar and that was beyond repair. And she was waiting on a replacement, and we've been feverishly ringing around. And Patricia has as well. But anyone who heard Patricia yesterday, I'm sure lots of people listening said it to their friends. Do you know anyone who works in the stainless steel? Because such was the effect that she had on people. Patricia, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Well, more importantly, how are you?
I'm doing better than I was, okay. Joe.
What's the news?
The news is that I had a phone call approximately half an hour ago, maybe an hour ago,
okay,
to say that there will be a new hoist brought today.
Great.
And assembled, and Harriet, my old lady, my old hoist, will be going away,
okay.
But I will have this new hoist. It's not fully new, Joe.
Okay.
I understand it's secondhand, but that doesn't matter. I will make her my hoist like I did Harriet.
And Harriet, is that the name? That's not the brand. That's your name you put on her.
No, that's the name I call my hoist, Harriet.
Great.
And my chair is blue.
Okay.
Because the hub guards are blue.
Okay, that's your wheelchair. Okay, now,
yes.
So this afternoon it will arrive, hopefully. And we tweeted the actual piece of metal. I know every piece of metal is almost unique. Now, if this does not work, Patricia, which it will, we hope, there's a queue of people. For example, excuse me, our own Louise Duffy. You know Louise here does a fantastic music show between 12 and 1. Well, she heard you, and she said to me as I was doing the promo an hour ago, she said, if you don't get something for Louise as far Patricia this afternoon, her family in Castlebar run a company called Duffy Stainless Steel. And Louise said, if you didn't get fixed by this afternoon, she will personally instruct her brothers, they've been in business for 40 years, by the way, to make you a one-off gantry to that particular bar with once they got the spec. So we have that as a backup.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm sure there's loads of other people who are affected by what you said.
Oh my goodness, Joe, that is so wonderful. And to think that I was here yesterday, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And somebody said to ring you, and I'm so glad I did.
Okay.
Joe,
and they are hard to get. That was the problem, but hopefully this afternoon. Well, it sounds like it's the HSE. They say they will have it fixed.
I would hazard a guess, Joe, that I got it quicker than I would have if you hadn't have been involved.
Yeah, but even from last, as you explained, Patricia, you're in bed since last Wednesday. You cannot even though you have carers helping you at different times during the day, you cannot, without this hoist, you cannot leave the bed, which is intolerable.
They can only move my body up in the bed to a semi-sitting position, but they cannot lift me, Joe.
Yeah, and understandable.
Without the instrument, you know.
So that's
without Harry.
Well, if it's not, well, it will be. It will be. They say the HSE are adamant that they will.
I will let Sean know tomorrow morning. After I've had the test drive in the new hoist.
Have your name? Have your name for the new hoist?
I have to see her first. To familiarise myself.
And then the name, when you see it, the name will come to you.
Yes.
And who?
And if she fits my life, then she will be aptly named. I'll probably call her Josephine after you.
Okay, Josephine. From the movie Some Like It Hot. Great
yes,
movie.
And you have, your first name is Joe, so Josephine.
You're very good. So, anyway, Sean or whatever, there's loads of names, loads of people who led by Sean
so
who got
just,
stuck in. Yes, of course you can.
Can I just run something by you?
Yes.
There are many, many people out in the world who are suffering wars and all of that.
Yeah.
And I know how fortunate I am, but I also know how unfortunate I can be with the turnaround from, and sometimes the blockages that exist within the HSE to get something. Particularly in my situation, Joe, living on my own and coping on my own, it is particularly hard because, as I said to Annette this morning, one of your researchers, sometimes, Joe, they can overlook me as a person and they can dismiss the human being that they're seeing before them.
Yeah, but they're...
I'm a tiny little woman, Joe, but my mouth is my vocal point.
Your voice is very strong.
Yes.
And I know, Mom, everyone at the HSE do their best, but there
and
is
Joe,
they are busy.
All I've ever wanted to do was live my life with dignity, with grace, and with love.
Yeah.
And I love my disability. I would not give my disability to anybody else because it was given to me from the man above because he knew I could carry it. And I love my disability. Okay. And I love the person that I am.
Well, I think a lot of people hold a lot of affection. I'm sure people you know over the years, but a lot of people hold a lot of affection for you since yesterday's programme. So, and your the impact you made on so many people, Patricia. So look after yourself.
Little,
yes?
I'm just a little woman, Joe, with a lovely heart.
Yeah.
And well, thank you very much.
And a great voice. Onwards, good luck to you. Patricia, and
thank
of course,
you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks indeed. Sorry, and come back to me, Patricia. Oh. If your grand, come back to me. Come back to us, Sean or Annette. Come back to us if there's an issue. Okay.
Yes. Thank
Richie.
You very much.
See you later. Thank you.
And God bless.
God bless you too, Patricia. You're wonderful, wonderful. Where is Olive? Olive Cunningham. Olive. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were listening yesterday to our carers and the situation. What is your situation, Olive?
Well, I have quite a situation, but my main gripe really is this means testing.
Yeah.
Of across the board, it's means. I'm being subject to a means test for a living alone allowance that I declared when my daughter came to care for me after an accident.
Okay.
And I told them straight away, and the following week, £22 was taken off me.
Oh,
yeah. Now, the bottom line really here is I manage well. I'm not on the breadline, but it annoys me because throughout my 77 years, I feel very disregarded across the board. First and all, foremost, when I married Des, I became a housewife, as a description of me.
Yeah,
I never married a house, I married Des.
Well said.
Yeah. And then at times I was called a dependent, because I stayed at home, worked, rearing my two children, and loved it. Never wanted to work. I lived in the country. I couldn't really have worked anyway. Then I became a carer, and that's what I would be alluded to, because Des became very ill and for a very long time. And now, recently, after a bad fall and a femur break, I spent 6 weeks in the Mater Hospital because I got infections after. And I'm now on their paperwork as, wait for it now, they asked me what I do, and I said, I'm retired. That should have been enough.
Yeah.
But they put me down as house duties. So what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, now, I had to leave my job when I married Des, which was the way it was. As I say, I'm 77 years old.
If you're in the public service or whatever at the time.
Well, I wasn't in the public service. I was in Arnis.
I didn't know. I know the public service did it, which was outrageous. But some private companies did it as well. Okay.
They did.
So, yeah.
I had to go. Now, they took me back on a part-time basis, but I was let go. I had to leave when I married. Now, I feel that right now, I've disappeared because I'm very, very disabled, not just due to the recent hip femur break, but over the years, since 1995, I have hip replacements twice, a revision of one hip again, a revision, a hip knee, a knee replacement, and a revision of that knee. And that complicated my recovery very much to have those two joints between the femur break.
Okay.
So I'm limping around. I can't board a bus. I'm afraid to board a bus. I have a rollator. I get my shopping online. I do all that. Mm-hmm. But one of the issues that's up there is cost of living. Now, that doesn't mean tea, sugar and butter.
Yeah.
It means to me, if I want to get a taxi down to my doctor from Castleknock Village, Carpenterstown, which you know, down to the village of Castleknock, taxi that you ring?
Yeah, either free now, whatever.
I can't remember. Free now.
Yeah.
€14.
Yeah, for short journeys.
€14, yeah. And I get appointments for various things now, and they're always at crack of dawn in the morning. The taxis hate going down through all the schools en route.
The traffic,
and it's hard to get a taxi. I don't drive, I never drove, but even if I could have driven 10 cars, I couldn't now.
Okay.
But my issue, I see housing as the major issue, and then health, but also the social welfare need to be get their socks pulled up about this means testing.
So
my daughter came to mind me. Sorry, I'm not cutting across.
No, you're grand.
My daughter came to mind me. You know, it's not fully permanent, but she's with me.
Yeah.
And out of, because on the paperwork, on the social, it said you have to declare if your circumstances changed. And like an Aegis, I wrote and told them, yes, my daughter's living with me. And I had to send in paperwork about what she might be bringing into the house. And she's a great girl, very generous, and we share things. But they don't know that. They don't know that it's all right to take £22 a week off me, that my daughter will see me through. I'm me, and yet again I'm being judged just because my daughter came back in to mind me, but there wouldn't be a carer around to come and help me in the aftermath. Anyway, it's kind of just I want to get it off my chest, because
you're right. And did he even say to you, is there any leeway, Olive? Did they say, if your circumstances change, please inform us within 6 months? Or do you have to do it immediately?
Any time on the paperwork, I remember reading it. If you're living alone allowance, if it changes, you must tell them. And I did. I'm sure that, but some woman went to prison there about to go for something that she didn't declare. Anyway, it's not that. I just felt I better abide by the rules, and I did.
Well, they whipped the €22 off you immediately.
The following week. payment with mine is that.
Oh, that was very efficient, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, they are. They're very efficient when they want to be.
This means test.
Anyway,
this means test.
This means test is my issue, and cost of living in that cannot should take into account. If I get anything done in the house, anything,
yeah.
And I used to be a horse of a worker, I can't do it. I can't shift anything. I can't move anything.
Of course.
I have to pay for it. I have to pay for it. And
you're also pointing out, Olive, that as years move on, you've got to get a taxi from A to B. And as we know, but don't blame the taxi people. Blame the people.
I'm not,
no, I know you're not. I'm saying I'm not blaming the taxi. I was in a taxi there 2 weeks ago and he was giving out about the price increase that's been foisted on him by the National Transport Authority. 10%, he said, we don't want it. We want to stay competitive. And it costs us 300 quid to get our machines changed anyway. excuse me for the new. But the point I'm making is, as you get a little bit older, you need more taxis, you need more transport, because you're not as mobile as you used to be. And it's a dreaded means test again. This dreaded means test. We should have a debate about the means test in Ireland, because we don't have, and it's argued. But every time, in fairness, I've heard all the political parties say no means test for child benefit. It's universal. It's for children. Let's keep it that way. Anyway, it probably cost a zillion to introduce a means test and the other payments as well. Stay with us, Olive. Bridget, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe.
Good. What's your situation, Bridget, please?
So mine is kind of similar, is in the sense that the means test is the problem with us as well. So my father had a stroke there a few years ago.
Okay.
And my mother then became the earner of the house, you know. Now, by earner, I mean she's working part-time or whatever.
Yeah.
But she ended up getting a pay increase, and she kind of got a new role in the job as well, which increased our wages.
Okay.
So we were like, oh, Jesus, great, you know, to see her actually going out and about, because she never really walked, you know what I mean? She kind of just took up the role then once my sister became carer for my father. And once that happened then, she ended up getting a letter out to the house then, and my father's disability allowance was cut. And my mother, they were both distraught. The whole family was distraught, because that meant losing the fuel allowance, the medical card, the bus pass, you know, the free travel pass.
Yeah.
And it just kind of put them under big financial pressure, in the sense that, like, if she left that role in her job, she couldn't just go back to the hour she was working or anything, you know, so she ended up having to leave work. So it's just more...
Because the few bob extra she got tipped her over this means test limit. And it could be, as we heard before, it could be a relatively small amount. But when when you tip over into that field,
it
becomes a canyon, because you lose so much for that small amount that you've tipped over.
But it's more the fact now that my father feels like he's a child. He was getting, you know, money off my mother and stuff like that, while I had to go through, you know, the whole process with, you know, they have to send it back into the social welfare and then prove that you're not working and everything else. So he felt like a child, you know, getting money off my mother, like, where his whole life he was used to working, earning, and it's horrible, like, and the hardship they went under. And then, you know, the government as well, they're basically treated the same way as a person on job seekers allowance, you know, someone who can actually walk.
Yeah.
Oh, they, like, my father can't walk, you know, he's not in a position to walk. And the means test should be cut for the disability allowance. Likewise, with the way they're dealing with the carers allowance.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the disability allowance is very important.
As we said, as we said yesterday, you heard Alan from Kerry
about
his
partner. Yeah.
Because his partner went over the threshold of his house so they could live together, so he could look after her, she immediately, she was disabled going over the threshold. But according to the state, there was a miracle in Kerry yesterday.
Yep.
When she got over the threshold, she suddenly wasn't disabled, and they withdrew her disability allowance.
Well, that's the exact same letter my father got out, basically saying they understand he has a disability, but you're earning too much. And the means that you're earning is exactly the same means you're allowed to have on disability allowance. So literally, they're right at the peak. It just cut off, and that was it then. Totally gone. Like, we actually kept the letter and all, just because we couldn't believe it when it said it on it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's more the fact then, they're had less money then because of that. So my mother ended up having to leave work and stuff. You know, she couldn't do anything about it. She was petrified of my father losing his medical card, because if he lost that, you know, his medical bills would be very expensive, you know. So he had a stroke that made him not able to walk.
Because,
he also has other conditions as well. Like,
because your mother worked harder, and she's obviously very bright, rightly so, as everyone is.
She is, yeah.
She got a little pay increase, but suddenly, because she got the pay increase, your father's disability disappeared.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And she never changed any hours in work, was working the same hours. And just simply because she got a little bit of a pay increase then, that was it, was cut off. But the legislation hasn't been changed since 2005.
Yeah.
So I can't understand why they're not kind of bringing in the factor with inflation and, you know, every price increase that's going out at the moment.
In fairness, they did up the limits on the means test this year, and they upped the amount. But they've now, well, it's in their manifesto, but they've now, it's concrete since Charlotte in Kintork, that episode with the Taoiseach. All of the three main leaders, Mary Lou, Simon and Micheál, they've all said publicly again that the means test is gone for carers during the term of the next government. So we'll hold them to that, and you'll hold them to that. But that's a terrible scenario. Your mother gets she's justified in, she gets a little promotion, and because she got a promotion, which is great, she got a small pay increase, and because of that, your father suddenly was the miracle of wherever you live.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's better then, you know, no disability at all. Like, but it's just, to be honest with you, they just felt as if the government was letting them down because my father is unable to walk. As I know, 10 people that are claiming disability allowance are unable to walk. If you're unable to walk and if you know, you literally can't move out of the house, it should be some sort of, you know, exception there, you know. It's very, very unfair, you know, that it's kind of like you're trying to get the whole house sorted and everything else, you know, keep the heating going, keep the...
And you described that demoralisation when the letter came in.
That's it. Now, my father just felt like a child. He literally felt like he was getting pocket money off my mother. No, because he couldn't provide for himself. He had no income at all.
Well, thanks. Sorry you have to go through this, Bridget, and your father especially, and your mother and family. There's no arguing this. It's just unfair.
That's it. Well, it's more just the fact that he's losing his bus pass and everything else.
Yeah, all the gateway stuff.
You know, you have his carer walking beside and getting on the bus with her bus pass.
Yeah.
And he hasn't got one for himself.
Okay.
You know, and he's the one that has a disability, you know.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Bridget. Thanks, Olive. And we'll come back to more after this break. By the way, yesterday the programme began with Damien from Martin's off licence. Fair play to him. He's quoted a number of newspapers there, but he told us that he was withdrawing, any alcohol connected with Conor McGregor will never darken the door. He's the winner of the off licence of the year. So fair play to him. He's an independent, putting his head above the parapet, because that's a significant thing to say. In the last few minutes, Tesco have just told us they will not be stocking any Conor McGregor alcohol product. Well, that's all he does, alcohol products. So the proper 12 is the whiskey. As I said yesterday, Tesco had it on special, which are club card for £25. Tesco have now confirmed it's gone. They will not be stocking proper 12. And I presume that means they're not stocking the stout. Not everyone stocks the stout, forward 12. But that's gone. No Conor McGregor products in Tesco. Musgraves, we rang them as well yesterday. Musgraves have confirmed, and they are in many ways bigger than Tesco, if you follow me, because Musgraves run, every Super Value is actually a franchise from Musgraves. Every Centra in the country. So you're talking about 700-800 shops. Conor McGregor's alcohol from any Musgrave store. And remember, Super Value have an awful lot off licence. As is from today, Proper 12, whatever his whiskey is called, I know he's still involved in it, but he sold it for zillion, billion, trillion. So Tesco, Musgrave, Centra, Super Value, gone. No Conor McGregor alcohol products. End of. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, that began yesterday. The first fella to put his head up above the parapet. And I was actually thinking about him yesterday evening. He's a shop, great shop. But he's on his own out there in Fairview. He doesn't have 57 stores. And I thought it was very brave of him to say no more Conor McGregor. So Tesco are in. Super Value are in, Centre are in. We put in just a straight question to Dunn's if they do stock it, and the other O'Brien's and Malloy's, and if they want to contact us, it's joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I reckon that's over 1,000 stores and supermarkets that have delisted Conor McGregor's products since yesterday. Super Value, Centra, by the way, the Mace have delisted, Donnybrook Fair have delisted McGregor's alcohol products. And Tesco, so that's well over 1,000 stores so far. So let's see who else stocks it, and people I think know the reason why at this stage. That headline in the Irish Times on Saturday morning, I think said it all for so many people, and I know the Irish Times took a long time in composing the headline, and it read, "Jury in civil case finds McGregor raped woman in Dublin hotel." That's the headline which said it all in the Irish Times. The North Strand in Dublin, people know it, especially if you go to Croke Park. So apologies to the Mayo people who probably don't know it that well. But Andy, good afternoon, Andy.
How you doing, Joe?
Yeah, what's happening down there? We need to explain to people exactly where it is.
Yeah, well, it's the stretch, I suppose, between East Wall and Ballybock. That's the kind of North Strand area, and there's a freight line that runs through the locality.
The railway line, and yeah.
The railway line there, yeah. And yeah, the last week, I'd say there's been three instances of stone throwing where you got kids chucking stones at houses, cars, and at people. Last Sunday, it got completely out of hand. And there was at least 10 houses smashed up and two cars done, and passers-by thrown. They were just chucking rocks from the railway tracks. And this has been going on probably for months now, intermittently, but it's escalated to a degree now that it's well out of hand. And I know that's been happening in East Wall. I've been talking to people from there, and that was happening down around April time. And it's probably, you hear anecdotal stories, it's happening up in Clonliffe, anywhere where the railway track backs onto houses.
And what's the kick, Andy? Are they throwing the rocks at the trains?
No, they're throwing rocks at people's houses, at people's windows, at people's cars.
So what's the railway line got to do with it?
Well, the railway line is where they get their ammunition, Joe. There's a plentiful supply.
Of course, yeah. And does the railway line, in other words, can they be chased across, or are they somewhat safer on the other side of the railway line? That's what I was thinking. In other words, can you get at them? Can the guards get at them?
No one can get at them because they're up in the viaduct. So it's the raised section of the railway line. So there's not a chance anybody can get up at them. So they're getting on the line somewhere.
So they're picking up the rocks, the ballast that we know on the railway lines there, and they're picking them and they're just lobbing them randomly at houses.
And they're filming it as well, Joe, because I've experienced it myself on Sunday. I was sitting in my kitchen and I heard a big bang and looked up, and there was a camera phone peeping over the wall and a couple of kids, and they lobbed another rock at the window, and I don't know how it didn't smash, but they're filming it. They're getting a kick out of it, and it's just mindless. Absolutely mindless.
Gardaí?
Well, the guards, I mean, they try their best. I don't think they can do much unless they catch them doing it.
But you're telling me, which is true, you're telling me you can see them lobbing the rocks.
Yeah.
Is there CCTV? Yeah, sure. Is there, what do you have to do?
It's a good question, Joe. You know, I don't know what needs to happen, but I certainly know Irish Rail need to secure their lines a lot better than they do.
And I know Eastwall and Ballybock well, but it's a lot of older people. It's a very settled community.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's people behind these windows, Joe. You know, there's elderly people, there's kids, there's babies, there's people sitting down having their tea. You know, you name it, and then there's a rock coming in on top of them, and there's glass everywhere. And there are countless cases in our locality alone over the last month where that's happened.
I'll bring in Martin. Stay there. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text. We're talking about houses and people being lobbed with rocks coming from the railway line, the ballast from the railway line in the Ballybock North Strand and possibly even further up near Croke Park. Martin, what's your situation?
Yeah, so I would add something similar, maybe 3 or 4 nights before Halloween, where I could hear some bang, and I was upstairs in the house and I could just hear bang, bang. So I come downstairs, I thought somebody was breaking into the back of the house. I could hear the back door smashing. So I got my baby in one hand. I was the only person in the house with the child. My wife was out. And when I came into the back kitchen, I realised it was young lads throwing rocks from the railway line.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the child was screaming, crying.
Course,
I was shouting
yeah.
at them. Eventually, they ran off. And they returned Friday 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
They threw a few rocks at the back of my house. They smashed up some cars on the road at the side. And then they were back again on Sunday. So we were out of the house on Sunday, but we came back to more rocks in the backyard and a couple more vans and cars smashed at the side of the house.
And it's just random vandalism. Dangerous with rocks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just random. And So windows, who fixes, who pays for all these windows that are being smashed? These car windows, vans.
Well, I paid for my own myself so far, but I'd be claiming it back from somebody.
Yeah, just if you want to get your insurance, you have to get it on the Pulse system. You have to report it to the guards.
Okay.
But, yeah. You know, and then sure, a lot of people probably aren't even reporting this, Joe. And you know, part of this is just to get people out there and report it it's going on too long. And
is it a busy? Is that a busy railway line? I know there's effectively two railway lines up that. But you say it's a freight line? Is it busy?
It's a freight line. It's not. It's very seldom used. And, you know, during the week you might get 4 or 5 runs, but that's about it. It's a rat run anyway, you know.
So they're not.
At the back line is a passenger line, and there's a regular passenger trains. Actually, the second time it happened, the reason that I knew they were there was because I heard the train beeping. So the train was blowing the horn, and they never do that. So when I heard that, I went straight out to the backyard, and there they were.
Mm-hmm.
So they were on the railway line as the train was going past, and then when the train went past, they just continued throwing the rocks.
And there's no rush about them, Joe. They just stand there and do it, you know, because they know they can't be chased.
Yeah.
Or they can't be caught.
See, what people don't realise sometimes is that Croke Park is bordered on both ends by a railway line. There's two railway lines coming into that part of Dublin, but one of them is more of a passenger line coming in from Castleknock and Sligo into Amiens Street, and the other one is more goes down towards the docks. And was originally going, I think it went as far as the Point Depot with freight primarily. And it still does go down into the docks, by the way, with freight. And it actually can cross the road there at the Eastwall Road and go straight down into the docks. It's a wonder it's not used more for containers or whatever, given the traffic chaos. I'm baffled to Andy and Martin. The Gardaí, like someone's going to get killed here.
Yeah, well, I think there's a bit of joined-up thinking required because, you know, Irish Rail are looking at the guards and the guards are looking at Irish Rail, and there's, you know, there needs to be a plan, a coordinated plan put together because they're both saying their hands are tied, but there has to be something.
And how are their hands, how are their hands tied?
Well, number one, you have to, from a guard's perspective, you have to catch them doing it.
Yeah.
And from an Irish Rail side, they're saying, well, it's a Garda issue. And the guards can't get up on the track in time. So there's nothing that can be done at the moment. But there is, you know, movement, and because this has been going on for months now, and I'm sure Irish Rail and the guards are sick of people calling into them. But something has to be done, and you know, it has to get out there. It has to be coordinated. It has to happen.
And are you saying the guards they wouldn't have the vehicles to get up onto those locations?
Not at all. No, unless they're going to be transported by CIE, but that's about it.
Okay, statement from Irish Rail, 24-hour monitoring station continuously in place. Boy, Barry Kenny, come on, Barry, come on the radio, you know you're always welcome here. 24-hour monitoring station continuously in place, Eden Road's Aaron Compound, Osprey Road. Repeated checks to Eden Road Aaron's boundaries from Osprey Road up, including North Brook Avenue Lower. New palisade fencing will be placed along the boundary. Do you recognise these roads, Andy or Martin, from North Brook Avenue Lower to Strandville? Well, new fencing. Crime prevention officers alerted Gardaí and are looking for them to arrange additional patrols. Strandville Avenue, Northbrook, West Road. All train drivers that report sightings of trespass and our regional team will respond upon alerts. Eden Road Aaron staff will continue to liaise with the community in these areas and promptly address any breaches of boundary fencing. Okay. That's the update. Let's see. As you say, other people are affected, but you reckon, Andy, they feel so powerless.
The residents are angry, you know. Yeah. They're fed up. They've had repeated damage done. Just at the weekend there, you know, when the incident happens, you're knocking around the houses. Did you get done?
Yeah, terrible, terrible.
And they're saying, I just replaced the glass there last week and it's done again.
And you know, Martin, do you have to put in extra security, CCTV or?
Yeah, well, I've... Since I moved into the property, I've spent $5,500 on CCTV.
Wow.
Just because of things like this.
And did you know before you moved in that you were moving into this?
No. Well, I would have had some sort of an idea that it was, let's say, there was a railway line behind and it's on a main road, that there'd be some sort of antisocial behaviour, but I wasn't expecting this.
Okay.
It hasn't happened, and
I'm very conscious, Martin, and I'm sure Andy as well. We're very conscious that you mentioned the baby and these rocks flailing over.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, you say it used to happen years ago, but my understanding of years ago with the freight trains used to be the Guinness trains, and the lads would jump down on the sidelines or the ditches onto the railway line, jump up and try and throw a can of or a barrel of Guinness off. But this is... That was wrong, but this is much more sinister. They're just lobbing stones for the sake of.
Yeah.
Okay. Barry Redmond's after coming in. Barry in East Wall.
Yeah, Joe. How's it going?
Good. What did you have to do in your house? Your mother's house?
So, look, my mother lives down there still. And father, she's 83. My father's 90.
Yeah.
So they back right onto the railway track. Okay. And their windows have been put in 3 times.
Oh, for God's
sake. So... One rock narrowly missed my mother when she was out in the backyard, and what we've had to do was put steel grids on the back windows.
For God's sake. And remember, windows, I know the grids are great, but windows are an escape route as well, if there's ever a fire, God forbid. So she's now got steel grids on her back windows because of these couriers.
Yes. And look, what the police say, so we've reported it a number of times, it's up on the Pulse system. What the police say, they don't have jurisdiction onto the railway tracks, so they can't get up to get them.
Okay.
And like in what you said there, Barry Kenny, I believe there's now CCTV put in.
Well, they said that,
But previously there was no CCTV, which I find hard to believe because it's the main artery down into the Dublin Docklands on that rail line, and it's also the main train route back into Conwy Station.
Yeah. Okay. And by the way, how does your mother react to this, Barry?
Oh, she was terrified, absolutely terrified. Like, she's sitting in the house, 9 o'clock in the evening, and suddenly 2 windows are put in.
God. And has she been living there all of her life?
A whole life. Now, in fairness, so we've approached local politicians, and I'll give a shout out, Daniel Ennis, the local councillor, and Gary Gannon, pushed CIE to get some things done.
Okay. And you can find a full list of candidates in that constituency, along with Gary Gannon.
Correct.
Don't start the under list. There's about 25. But you can look it up at the RT website. Thanks, indeed, Barry. Barry, kind regards to your mother, Janie Mack, to put up with that now. Is at 82 years of age. Okay. Where is Frank? Frank, come in.
Joe, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right.
What happened?
I just listened to your conversation about the lads pegging stones. I live up in Cabra, our house backs onto the Lewis, the new Lewis line. And last summer, a couple of occasions, the kids on the trampoline and the security lights might come on. And then, lo and behold, a load of stones come out of the darkness into our back garden.
From where, do you know?
Three occasions, huh?
From where and by whom?
From that, obviously, young tugs on the railway track, yeah. On the Lewis line. No way of catching them. They either get up at Cabra or they get up at Fisborough. And off they go.
So they're in a no-go area, but the people who the people who can no-go there are the Gardaí.
Down there all right, but you want to be waiting for them, do you know what I mean? But there's two ways of escaping. They escape either way out of the railway track, you know what I mean?
And what's the point you make here about... your kids were out on the trampoline.
Our kids were out on the trampoline.
Yeah, okay, and they were lobbing rocks over at them.
Over the back,
And these are not pebbles. Anyone who knows, everyone knows what the...
No, it'd be like your fist.
Yeah.
Besides the clenched fist, some of them made them back of the house, which is probably about, I don't know, it would be about 10 metres, 15 metres, hit the back windows. Lucky enough, their power was gone at that stage. The power in the throw, I should say.
And any comeback, no?
Not sure. How would you come back? Who would you come back to?
Well, I'm thinking the guards are in right there.
No, you're not sure. What the guards going to do? They're not going to sit there waiting for them for the next time to come.
Yeah, and I know there's
Lewis would have security cameras at all the stations, but they'd see them coming out of there. You know what I mean? They'd see them walking down the tracks. But they all have their balaclavas on, and you'd never recognise them.
But what's the kick they're getting out of it?
What's the kick? I don't know. Cause damage. Nothing better to be doing, Joe.
Yeah, I know, Frank. I know. Okay, Frank. Thanks indeed, Frank. Andy.
No worries.
Martin and Barry. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, reading or listening to that powerful ad by Saoirse Ronan for Childline. Childline of Nantes will say that phrase that Saoirse is so vividly and powerfully using in the ad, "Once I was that child," is a phrase that they got from a Liveline listener, or caller, about 8 weeks ago. It was a Liveline listener who rang in about corporal punishment, and you'll remember, well, hopefully you'll remember, about 3 weeks of the most incredible stories about physical punishment in Irish schools over the decades, up to relatively recently, and most of it in primary schools. But one of our callers, I remember vividly, she kept using that line, "Once I was that child." And it's so powerfully used by Saoirse for Childline. So please support, if you can. Please support Childline. Let me go to David. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You met the perpetrators of this rock throwing.
Well, I saw them. They were up on the bridge. I saw what they were doing. And I kind of yelled at them, obviously, and at which point I decided to lob a few rocks at my head. Not a care in the world, kind of give me the finger, getting their phones out, I'm sure, to put it up on TikTok.
And did you, when you, okay, you confronted them, how far? This was only last Sunday.
This was on Sunday, yes. So I saw them, they started ambling up the line, so I followed the line up. And yeah, they took their time, not a care in the world, firing rocks onto the street, up through Ballybock. We're hanging out on Ballybock Road over the bridge there, taking their time, thinking they were invincible.
David, give me a description. Age?
Yeah, I'd say about 15. One lad had his hood up and a balaclava on. Other guy had his hood up, no balaclava on. I'd say about 15.
Okay, in balaclava, no balaclava. What else?
Yeah.
Hoodies. Yeah, had he bicycles, jackets, scooters?
Hoodies. Oh, no, they're just on foot.
Yeah.
So they're not moving at speed here, right? They're just walking along the line, you know, ambling along, causing havoc.
Yeah. And oblivious, obviously, cocksure they weren't going to be caught.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Not a care in the world and no consideration. Like a few of the ones that loved at me were, okay, small enough stones, but they were throwing large rocks, I say, 4 kilos over the side of the bridge. So it's only a matter of time before something really, really bad happens.
And I'm also thinking of the train drivers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the staff, yeah. Okay, David, thanks indeed. Prue French Davis. Prue, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Joe.
And as we know, we're all encouraged to go out and vote this coming Friday. What's happened in your household? You've got a voting card for who?
I've got a voting card for my husband who died 4 years ago.
Okay.
And I have a voting card for my daughter who left home about 20 years ago, lives in England.
So they're still on the electoral register?
Yes. Yeah.
But your husband...
And so every time I get the flyer, I get 3 flyers for everyone.
Okay, and have you... I don't know, do you have to go along and take... I thought you're automatically taken off the electoral...
Well, I thought so too, especially, you know, I mean, after all, your pension ceases the minute you die. They know about that. So why don't they take you off the register?
And I'm sure it's upsetting to get... Your husband's
it
name?
Is. Yes, it is. Yeah.
4 years later. Now, obviously, to vote, you also have to bring along ID, so there is
a
double lock, so to speak. But your daughter-in-law still gets a card for her mother.
Yes, and she died in 2017.
7 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, apart, as you say, apart from the distress caused by receiving mail for a deceased family member. And as you say, the state does know the old age pension does stop on the
Absolutely.
Date of death.
Yeah.
And I don't know, well, you probably do, Prue. And given that the all the burdens and toings and froings around someone's passing, if you are paid beyond the date of your relative's death, or if that person is paid beyond the date of their death, the department will get it back off you pronto.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So they certainly know that somebody has died.
Yeah, but you're saying why can't they?
Why can't they do it? Yeah.
Yeah. Why can't they talk to each other? Isn't that the
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And have you been canvassed by many people, Prue?
One.
Okay. Okay, and the voting, as I say, is
I wouldn't have minded the canvassing. I might have pointed out to them the extra cards that were coming all the time.
Okay. That's Prue French Davis. Prue is in County Meath. Deirdre.
Yes.
Tell us, your husband died in February, unfortunately.
That's right, Joe, yeah. And I don't know how many people are aware that it takes at least 6 months before one receives the results of a post-mortem. Which to me is an extraordinary period of time for something as straightforward as a post-mortem.
And why does it take so long?
Well, that's what I want to know. I want to know insofar, Joe, the minute the post-mortem is done, right, you wait 6 months for the results to find out what the cause of death is. The minute the post-mortem is done, why can a family not get an interim notification to say the cause of death was and the rest of the results will be processed and you will be informed in due course.
Okay.
Because it's mental torture waiting on results.
Yeah.
For a sudden death, you're tortured. Was there something could have done? Was he calling out? Did I miss something? And it takes 6 months before one gets the results. Now, in my case, there appears to have been some form of mix-up. In August, my husband died on the 12th of February. In August, I got a call from the Gard Síochána just to say that, give me the results of the post-mortem and that the HSE would be in touch with me, re-registration. Fine, I waited, mm-hmm. and I thought, well, we'll wait. And it, to me, I honestly didn't realise it was an official call. You understand?
Yeah,
he just
yeah.
told me the results. And I waited, and eventually I rang your show yesterday to discover today that the death was registered in August, and nobody informed me until today. Now, when the guards are informed, why doesn't they get the letter from the coroner and the HSE gets the same notification to register the death? Why doesn't the family get a copy of that form? You know, it just does. It seems very strange because it is mental torture, Joe. There's no question about it. And then when you do get the results after 6 months, it starts the grieving process again.
And you say the Gardaí will phone you and give you verbally the results, but that's of no use. It's appreciated, but it's of no use until you get it in paper. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I wasn't told to go in and register the death or anything. I was just told the results and that the HSE would be in touch with me.
Yeah.
But when they get, why involve the guards? I mean, why is the guard responsible for sending out a notice to the family?
And
the
of course,
coroner,
until you get the official death cert, you can't. There's a lot of insurance and various other things.
That's right. They will not. If you picture of. Now, 4 months later, I had discovered the death is registered and I can go and get a death cert. But if it applied to somebody waiting on money or waiting on a life insurance that can't be paid out until the death is registered,
or pensions or whatever else. To sort out.
It just seems so strange. And then when one does, even 6 months is a long time, Joe.
And
passed away.
Yeah, and he died suddenly in February, you tell
yes.
me. Yes,
He died in his sleep.
Oh, God rest
him. But who is responsible for this long delay?
They say it's a staffing issue. They need to allocate more staff.
Well, let them allocate more staff.
Yeah, let them allocate more staff,
You know, like, why is it up to the guards to inform family?
Yeah.
But, however, and the other thing is, it could have been simplified in some, I don't know whose responsibility, it would be maybe a website for somebody that is bereaved, what they do in the event of a death. You know, step 1, 2, 3, where to go, where to register the death, how long they have to register the death.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing, to simplify
in
things.
In this day and age.
Well, I would have thought so, Joe. Yeah.
And that there'd be a one page created between all the departments. Yes. That they'd...
Well, the main point at this stage, it was only today I have discovered that the death was registered.
Yeah.
But the main point being, if the coroner is informing the HSE and the Gardaí, the guards are involved because of a sudden death, obviously.
Okay.
But why not send the details to the family? Or an interim report directly after a post-mortem that the cause of death, that's the main anguish, Joe. Waiting and wondering what happened. Could I have done something or what was
it's
it?
Everyone's,
or,
I was, yeah.
You know, you just spend your time overthinking.
Yeah, if I had woken or had an hour earlier, if I had said something, I know.
Or was he calling and I didn't hear?
It's sudden death,
I know. Yeah, that's just the way it is.
Okay.
So, Joe, I don't know, at least today,
by contacting you,
I have discovered the death is registered, which I wouldn't have done.
Well, that's good, anyway.
Which is dreadful, yes.
Okay, you've gone through a tough time and now you've Christmas coming up, your first Christmas.
Well, I'm forgetting about that bit of it for the moment.
Yeah, it'll be
come.
Gone quick enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Please go.
Okay, Joe.
Okay, Deirdre, thanks.
And I hope it airs that for somebody and it's of some benefit to that somebody would do something about it.
Especially at this time, Okay, Deirdre,
absolutely.
Thanks indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Joe, and condolences on your husband's passing. Joe at rt.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Betty Coe, campaigner Betty Coe. Were you up in case?
Oh, hello, Joe.
You haven't been going around putting up posters.
I'm afraid not, Joe.
How did you?
I haven't been taking them down either now.
I know that, but you haven't been taking them down because they never went up in the first place. So tell us.
They did actually. They actually
went
up.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah, so we were a little bit behind the groove because before we realised that the posters were gone up.
So you're in Rosslare Harbour and Kilrain there. And South Wexford. And what you tell me about the election posters. What did you manage to do?
Well, the election was announced and it caught us a little bit by surprise. And the next thing, the posters were all up. So we emailed, we'd done up a very carefully worded email because you have to have respect. People have a democratic right to put up their posters. So we emailed everybody, respectfully requesting them to remove the posters as we had allocated Kilran Rosser Harbour as an election poster free zone.
Okay.
So you couldn't believe it. They were so good.
Wow.
All the candidates were amazing. They came and removed. Within, say, a week, 10 days, all the posters were gone.
So
here we are, poster free.
And nobody objected?
There was only one person who wasn't too happy about it. Everybody else has, well, as far as I can see anyway, I was out and about at the craft fair on Sunday here. And people were congratulating me. Everywhere I go, locals are congratulating me for the initiative, that they're all totally in favour. Now, I'm not aware of anybody, only one person, who had a bit of misgivings about it.
And did the candidate say, we need to get our, in fairness, we live in a democracy, we need to get our message out, we need to get our name out. How are they getting their messages across?
Well, they're sending out their flyers. Every house has received their flyers. They're knocking on doors. Every time you turn on the telly, they're on the telly with debates. They're on local media, local newspapers, and social media. So I kind of feel at this stage that there's so many different media that they can get themselves out there. But by engaging with their communities, I figure is the best way for them to be canvassing for votes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing. In fairness, we're very lucky in this area anyway that we know all the candidates.
Okay. But if there was new candidates, younger people trying to get in.
Yeah, well, they're very, very, very inclined to use social media.
Yeah, of course.
More than
you're
the
right,
older
you're
candidates.
Right. You're right, you're right. And is it just a visual clutter? Like, if it's visual clutter, it should be the council you should be getting onto, or the national roads. Because the number of signs on roads and the amount of unnecessary street furniture, poles, double poles, triple bus stops, it's an obstacle course for all of us. For anyone visually impaired, it's a horrific obstacle course. We've too many poles. We've too many bits of things sticking, too many various other pieces on our road. I counted one exit the other day on the N7. I counted 12 signs. 12 signs. The metal workers must be doing extraordinarily well. And I'd say it's two signs would have sufficed. Two signs would have sufficed.
Yeah, well, what we're concerned
would
about.
Could you do that next, Betty?
No, I won't be going that far. What we're concerned about also, apart from the danger, like during the local elections here a few months ago, there was 45 posters on the roundabout here alone, which created a huge distraction. Like, this is the main route from Europe through. You've got God knows how many boats coming into the harbour here, and this is the main road through.
And it's getting busier and busier, as we know.
It's getting
since
busier
Brexit,
and busier.
Yeah.
And One candidate had 9 posters on the roundabout. The next guy would come and put up 12 and so on. And that's what's happening with the general election.
And they're not,
well,
by the way, the posters aren't cheap.
They're surely not. No,
no, no, they are brilliant. I say this now for as a child of Ballyfermot. They were brilliant after the election. I remember using Sean Sherwin posters after the election back in 19 whatever tiddly squat, and we use them to build a pigeon loft. They're very useful in the pigeon lofts.
Yeah, but there's so many of them now, and they're putting up multiple posters each candidate. And to recycle those, you're talking about landfill, and you're talking about, like, it's well documented the number of the hundreds of years it takes to rot down single-use plastic.
I know,
and these are hard, double-cored plastic curry boards. There's a huge environmental implication.
Well, that also means that come Saturday morning, Sunday morning, these posters are so valuable that most of the candidates go out and recover them because they can be used again maybe sooner rather than later. Okay, Betty Keogh, well done down in Rosslare. Joe at rte.ie 51551. I see in the last few minutes Martin Wall is adding to the piece I announced earlier about Tesco, Super Value, Musgraves, all destocking Conor McGregor alcohol products. Now, Barry's off licence. They run the cost. Barry's wholesalers, Barry Group, they run the cost cutter and indeed a carry out off licence. They've just told Martin Wall they're gone as well. No more Conor McGregor alcoholic products in their stores. And the Press Up Group say, we've never stocked them. They run an awful lot of restaurants. We've never stocked his whiskey or his stout. Anyway, okay, back after this. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Other suggestions for the use of used election posters, not just for pigeon lofts. Put them behind your dartboard. They're very useful for absorbing the dart that misses the dartboard and doesn't destroy your bedroom wall. The other thing, if it snows, which is in the forecast, they are brilliant if you put a bit of twine at the front of them, thread some twine through them. They're brilliant for use as sleighs sliding down the hills in your local area. These posters, I think they're about 12, 13 euro each. So they're not cheap. But anyway, they have a lot of uses, which means they won't be just thrown on the ground, we hope. Brian Conway, this story kind of escaped a lot of people. At the Veritas stores, the Veritas shops, they were a very distinctive part of a lot of, I think there was 12 of them, are all closing. Brian Conway, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe?
Would you remind people what they were very... I used to like rambling into the one opposite Wins there in Abbey Street. They had a lot. Now, they weren't Eastons. They had a different constituency, so to speak. They obviously had a lot of religious books, but they also had religious memorabilia, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And my wife, Trudy, she worked in Veritas, in that one you went into opposite Wayne's there in Middle Abbey Street. And she started there in 1974, straight after doing her leaving cert. Mm. But at that time, she worked in a department where you sold a thing called papal blessings. You got married, you had to get a papal blessing, supposedly signed by the Pope, to say it was okay to get married. I don't know what the story was, but she often got calls.
You could go in and buy a papal blessing.
Yeah. Well, you had to have a papal blessing when you got married.
What did you?
You had to have one.
Why?
Yeah, it was. I have no idea.
Okay.
But my wife, Trudy, well, she wasn't my wife at the time, she was a young lady. Yeah. She often got calls from distressed girls who'd gotten married and hadn't got their papal blessing and didn't know whether it was okay to consummate the marriage because they didn't get the papal blessing, you know. So it's funny how times have changed. Like,
so couples would be married,
yeah,
in the eyes of the church, but unless they got this document, this paper, this parchment,
it was a scroll.
Yeah, okay.
A certificate to say it was okay, that the Pope said it was okay for you to get married. So we got married in 1982, so we had to get one. So it was still going up until the mid-80s, I presume, anyway.
But did you need a papal blessing to get married? Or was just...
I think you did, yeah. I don't know, but I know that we had one.
And you're saying couples believe that they actually needed a papal blessing before they could consummate their marriage.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Ah, come on. Can you imagine the two of them sitting there every morning? They're married a week, 2 weeks, any post, and in the post. No, they're sitting there waiting on the postman here in the negligee. I don't know what she'd be wearing, but the husband's in the negligee and he's in a string vest, and they're sitting there on the stairs waiting on the papal blessing to come through the hall door before they could do the business.
Yeah,
even though they're married a month.
So you could imagine, like, I mean, at the time, in our late teens, early 20s, and trying to believe this. You know,
that's the way
Ireland was.
Yeah, so people were very, very devout. Any idea how much a papal blessing cost?
Probably a couple of quid. I have no idea. I can't remember.
My memory of them is that it was like a page out of Book of Kells. They were very ornate.
Yeah.
And then there would be a centrepiece, would be the photograph of Pope Paul people at Pope John the 23rd, they loved him as cherubic face, and going back to Pius. And I'm sure.
I think what you did, you went into Veritas, into the shop downstairs in the basement or something. I don't know where the department was.
Okay.
And you filled out your name of the wife and or the proposed wife and husband, and your address, and you'd wait until the blessing came back to say it was okay. Normally, you handed them in at the wedding when you were signing your certificate afterwards. So you'd show your paper blessing as well, you know.
Yeah, but I think they've. Can you imagine a fellow waiting, or a woman indeed? But the sex drive is the same in both, which we never realised back 50 years ago. But yeah, but imagine a man and a woman sitting there after getting married, and they do believe in marriage, and they're waiting on the paper blessing. Surely some morning when they're lying in bed, the two of them cuddling up, and he said, quick, was that the postman? He runs down the stairs in his Jay's fluid. There's nothing in the hallway. Well, nothing. There's a bill from revenue or whatever. And he runs up the stairs and he says, forget it. He says, Bridey, the paper blessing has arrived. I've left it on the kitchen table. Are you ready? And he dives in.
Yeah. And just beautiful, shows you how beautiful. The country has changed.
Okay. Brian, it's sad to see. I think it's sad to see any retailer go, be a restaurant, a shop or whatever, in Veritas. And great staff in Veritas. Great stuff.
Ah, yeah. Well, okay. It was a lovely shop as well. Lovely shops as well.
Yeah, lovely, sure, look at that. Bright shops.
Yeah.
Okay, Brian Conway, God bless you, as they say. I'll send you my papal blessing. I'll scribble it out here now. Though I'm still over the moon about this man who's been appointed a cardinal, 99 years of age. He'll be installed in a few weeks. I think his name is Alberto Albrecht. I actually wrote to him to congratulate him because I think it's a magnificent testament to older people. We've a new cardinal and he's 99, well, for a Catholic. We've a new cardinal and he's 99 and we'll be installed on December the 8th. Okay, in today's programme, Shane Galvin, Niall McGonigal, and it was produced by Shan O'Gorman. And of course, Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home with the latest colours and designs in curtains and bedding, in store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.